There's this very specific kind of frustration, and I think almost everyone listening knows what I'm talking about. It's not the frustration of not knowing what to do. It's kind of the opposite. It's knowing the answer is right there. You know, it's in a book on your nightstand, or it's a concept you've memorized. But then Tuesday morning rolls around, life gets messy, and you just do nothing with it.
The instruction manual problem.
Yeah.
We have the manual, but we just look at it instead of actually using it to build something.
Right. I've been using the manual as a coaster for my coffee. Mm. But today, we are finally opening the book. We're diving into Chapter 51 of the Raft to Freedom program.
And this is a big one.
It is. The whole mission for this deep dive is to bridge that exact gap. We're looking at how you move from just, you know, crisis management, keeping your head above water, to actually building a life of steady well-being.
The Raft program has a great phrase for this. It's the shift from crisis response to discovery. And that distinction is just, it's crucial.
Crisis response versus discovery.
Yeah. Crisis response is about surviving the storm. Discovery is about figuring out where you want to sail once the sea is calm.
So to get everyone oriented, we're using the RAFT framework. RAFT. It's an acronym that really maps out this whole journey. Before we jump into today's topic, let's do a quick recap. The context really matters here. So R was recognize.
Right. That was the first big chunk, chapters 1 through 21. That's where we stepped out of denial, faced the patterns, and got really honest about the cost. In the program's metaphor, this was surveying the dangerous shore.
Okay. Then we moved on to A for abandon.
Chapters 22 to 33. This was the active part of letting go, bailing the water, as the text says, stopping the habits that were fueling all the craving and ill will.
And most recently, we covered F for freedom.
Which was about tasting relief. You know, finding that little bit of space, that still point between a trigger and a reaction. But, and this is key for today, that freedom was often just fleeting. It was a glimpse.
Which brings us right here. T for train. Chapter 51, the last letter. We've built the raft. We've kind of raised the sails. But now we actually have to learn how to sail the thing.
Precisely. We're finally moving from the what and the why to the very specific how. And I think it's important to set the stage with a quote from Gautama, the Buddha, that opens this chapter.
Okay.
He says, "Just as the ocean has a gradual shelf, a gradual slope, in the same way, this Dhamma and discipline has a gradual training."
A gradual shelf. I like that. That's a very different picture than like a magic pill or some huge leap.
It is. And it's meant to be reassuring. It's a reminder that this is not an overnight fix. You don't just wake up one day with a new brain. It's a training. It's a progression. The ocean floor slopes gently. So does this work.
Let's dig into that, starting with the first big idea in this chapter, because it really explains why so many of us struggle to make change stick. The shift from state to trait.
Yes. This sounds a little academic, but it's life-changing once you get it.
So what is it?
It's the difference between a weather event and the climate. In the freedom stage, we experienced fleeting states of relief. Maybe you had a moment of calm, or you handle a conflict well. Those are states. They're temporary.
So a state is like a good mood. It comes and it goes.
Exactly. It's often dependent on conditions being just right. The training stage is about turning those fleeting states into enduring traits of character. It's about making that steadiness part of who you are, not just how you feel when everything's going your way.
The RAFT program has this analogy that just, it completely nailed it for me. It says, knowing where the Eiffel Tower is on a map of Paris is not the same thing as actually walking down the Champs-Élysées.
That's the one, the map versus the voyage.
Yeah.
And the material says, up until now, we've basically been studying the map of the human mind. We know where the dangers are. We know where the safe shore is. But knowing a map,
yeah,
that's all intellectual.
Right. And walking the territory is experiential.
Wow.
And that's where we get stuck, isn't it? We just keep collecting more maps because the theory is safe, the territory is messy.
It is. Which brings us to what's called Gautama's fourth realization. He saw that freedom isn't some lucky accident. It's not just for people who are naturally spiritual. He realized it is a workable program.
A workable program. That makes it sound almost like, I don't know, a workout plan.
And that's exactly how you should think about it. This is the middle way program or the Noble Eightfold Path. But yeah, think of it as a gym routine for your mind. The text says it's how you turn insight into actual practice. It's saying, okay, you've glimpsed freedom. Now here are the reps you need to do to make it stick.
Okay, so let's get into those reps. Let's open the operating manual because this is where I get lost. You know, it's Tuesday. I'm stressed. Something annoying happens at work and I feel a wobble coming on. What do I actually do?
The chapter gives some very specific, practical principles for that exact Tuesday scenario. And the first one is, give the voyage a rhythm.
So, routines. But why is that so important at this stage?
Think of it as building a container or a hull for your day. If you just pour water on a flat table, it spreads out and it's gone. If you pour it into a cup, you can actually hold it.
Oh, fair.
The program says that without some kind of hull-like, simple, steady routines, all the insights you gain just slosh back into the sea.
And this isn't about being super rigid, right? Like, I don't have to wake up at 4 a.m. for an ice bath.
Not at all. The text says not rigid rules, just steady timbers. It's about saving your energy. If you have to fight with yourself every single morning about whether you're going to meditate or journal, you're just burning fuel. A rhythm makes it automatic. It holds you when you don't feel like you can hold yourself.
That flows right into the next point, which for me is maybe the most powerful part of the chapter. Steer by action, not weather.
This is the one. This is the one that trips almost everyone up.
It does.
Yeah.
Because the weather, my mood is usually awful when I need this stuff the most.
Right.
If I wait until I feel like being skillful, I could be waiting forever.
Correct. We have this idea that we need to act authentically, which we usually take to mean act how I feel. I feel angry, so I'll act angry. I feel lazy, I'll act lazy. This training flips that. It says you train what you do, not what you feel. Even in a total fog of a bad mood, you can still choose to make the next skillful move.
So it's almost like the heart follows the helm.
That's a beautiful way to put it. You turn the wheel, you take the action, and the feelings often catch up later. You don't meditate because you feel peaceful. You meditate to become peaceful.
Right. Okay, so we're steering by action, but we still need to see where we're going. The program talks about reading the dashboard. Is that just another word for mindfulness?
It's mindfulness, but it's applied mindfulness. It's not passive. It's active monitoring. It's noticing a pattern just as it's starting. The text asks, is a hindrance rolling in? Is a sense door trigger lighting up?
Sense door trigger. Can we unpack that for a second?
Of course. In this framework, we have six sense doors. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. A trigger is just any input that hits one of those doors. You see a stressful email. You hear a critical comment. You think about a past failure. Reading the dashboard is just noticing that moment of contact before it spins out into a full-blown reaction.
So instead of suddenly finding myself overwhelmed, I catch it right at the door. Oh, I just heard that, and my stomach clenched.
Exactly. You read the dashboard so you can choose what to do next. Right. Cool it down, maybe energize it, or just simplify. If you don't read the dashboard, you're just reacting on autopilot.
Now, this next concept, I know you want to talk about this one, the ethics of uncertainty.
I love this. I really do, because it's so forgiving. Look, most of the time, we are sailing in fog. We don't have a perfect map of the future. We don't know the absolute right choice for our career 5 years from now.
Right. And that uncertainty is paralyzing. We get so scared of making the wrong move that we end up making no move.
Yes. Or we panic. The ethics of uncertainty says you don't need the perfect choice. You just need the harmless one. You just have to take one small step that points away from harm, even if you can't see the final destination.
That just feels like a huge weight lifting. I don't have to be right. I just have to be harmless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Simplifies everything. Is this next action harmful to me or someone else? No.
Yeah.
Okay, then take the step.
And for those moments when we are really in the fog, when the lizard brain is taken over, the chapter has a tool, the 10-second navigation check. It's just three questions. I think this is something you could tape to your monitor.
Bruce, yeah, share them.
Okay. Question one, what choice reduces harm right now? Question two, what choice increases steadiness? And question three, what choice supports connection?
Simple, powerful. It cuts right through the noise, reduces harm, increases steadiness, supports connection. Notice it doesn't ask what makes me happy or what feels good.
It's amazing. Focusing on steadiness is so much more doable than happiness. Happiness feels like an outcome. Steadiness feels like an action I can take.
Steadiness is sustainable. Chasing highs is not. And usually, if you aim for steadiness, a kind of quiet happiness follows anyway.
I want to pivot a little bit because we have the manual, we have the checklist.
Yeah.
But why does this stuff actually work? I mean, we're talking about rewiring patterns that have been there for decades.
Well, the RAF program grounds this whole thing in neuroscience, specifically neuroplasticity.
The old classic. Neurons that fire together, wire together.
That's the one. What it means for training is this. Your brain loves efficiency. It loves the path of least resistance. So if for 20 years your go-to reaction to stress has been to get angry or check out, that neural pathway is a superhighway.
And the path for pause and breathe is like a tiny overgrown trail in the woods.
Exactly. It's high friction at first.
Yeah.
But every single time you choose to pause, every time you practice restraint, you are physically strengthening that new pathway. You are literally building up the regulatory control in your prefrontal cortex.
The CEO of the brain.
Right. And at the same time, you're calming down the amygdala, the brain's alarm system. The text compares it to forging a path. The first few times, it's hard work. But if you walk it every day, that's the work. Training, eventually, that becomes the easy path.
The program also brings in psychology, right? Behavioral activation.
Which connects right back to steer by action, not weather. The psychological principle is that action can be an antidepressant. Action creates momentum. We think we need motivation to act, but it's almost always the other way around. You act, then motivation shows up.
And then you bring in Aristotle. I love when we get neuroscience and ancient Greece in the same conversation.
Aristotle basically invented the science of habit. He had this concept of hexis. He said virtue isn't a single heroic act. It's a stable quality of character that you build through practice. You become brave by repeatedly doing brave things. You become steady by practicing steadiness.
It's the ultimate pragmatist view. Does it work? Does it reduce suffering? Yes.
Yeah.
Then do it.
Exactly. It's not about being morally perfect. It's just about, does this increase your capacity to live well?
Speaking of living well, something I really appreciate about the RAFT program is that it's not a cult. It doesn't claim to be the only way.
No, and that's so important for this training stage. The text is very clear that you might need extra planks for your raft.
Extra planks. I like that image. Your raft is customizable.
It is. Listeners might be using MBSR or ACT or DBT. Those are all great. The program says use them. They're compatible.
It also mentions fellowship communities, things like 12 steps, SMART, recovery dharma.
Yes. The program sees those not as competition, but as extra crew, or maybe wind in the sails. If a community helps you steer, then invite them on board. The goal isn't to be a purist. The goal is to get to the safe shore.
There's an identity shift that happens here too, which I found sound really moving. When you start to see all this as training, as building a raft, gathering a crew, you stop seeing yourself as some broken thing that needs to be fixed.
That's it. That is the profound shift from I am broken to I am learning.
I am learning. That just feels so much lighter. It takes away all the heaviness of a diagnosis or a label.
It restores dignity. If your identity is I am broken, then every mistake you make just confirms that identity. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But if your identity is I'm learning, then a mistake is just data. It's part of the curriculum.
The RAFT program has a great word for this. It talks about wobbles.
It's a gentle word, isn't it?
It really is. It doesn't use a heavy word like relapse. It's a wobble.
Mm-hmm.
You just tipped a bit. You're still on your feet.
That's intentional. A rough patch or a wobble is not proof that you failed. It is just information.
Information.
It's data from your dashboard. It's a signal. Hey, check your energy. Check the hull. Are you lonely? Are you tired? It's a signal to adjust course. Simplify, pause, cool down, reconnect. It is not a signal to give up and sink the whole ship.
So if I have a wobble this week, if I lose my temper or fall into an old habit, I haven't failed the program.
No, you are on the path and you've hit a bump. Recovering from the wobble is the practice. That's the whole point.
That is so freeing. It just removes all the shame from the process.
Shame is heavy cargo. We're supposed to throw that overboard in the abandoned stage. No need to haul it back on board now.
Okay, before we wrap, I want to come back to this idea of freedom itself. The chapter asked a really sharp question about what we think freedom even is. And I think most of us get it wrong.
Yes. It asks, do you see freedom as freedom to, as in I can do whatever I want, or do you see it as freedom from?
A steadier freedom.
Right. Freedom to is the freedom of impulse. I want the cookie, I eat the cookie. It feels free in the moment, but it usually builds a cage made of consequences.
It leads you right back to the dangerous shore. You just become a slave to every whim.
Exactly. The training is about cultivating freedom from, the freedom from being a slave to your impulses, the freedom from being dragged around by your moods. That's true autonomy.
So what does all this mean for someone listening right now? We've got the manual. We know it's about rhythm and action and using our dashboard.
It means the journey stops being just an idea you listen to in a deep dive. It becomes a set of small, steady actions. How you speak, how you listen, how you act when you're under pressure. It's the quiet shift from being at the mercy of life to working skillfully with it.
And just remember, it's a gradual shelf. You don't have to be a perfect sailor tomorrow. You just have to be willing to open the manual.
And take the next harmless step.
We absolutely have to mention that this incredible resource, the RAFT to Freedom Workbook, is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. And the amazing thing is, they're making the entire 66-chapter workbook available completely for free.
Which is just a huge gift to the community. You can find it all online at rafttofreedom.org.
Definitely go check that out. There are PDFs, worksheets, all those extra planks we talked about. It's all there.
It's a comprehensive map. Okay. But as we've been saying, knowing the map isn't the voyage. You have to do the walking.
So as we close out, I want to leave you with that question from the chapter to think about this week. It gets right to the heart of it. Ask yourself, do you imagine freedom as doing whatever I want, or as the steadier freedom of being able to choose well even under pressure?
And to send us off, here's the closing quote from Gautama at the end of the chapter.
This teaching and training has one taste, the taste of freedom.
Thanks for listening.
See you in the next deep dive.